Hello. Oh, it's looping. It's looping and I'm embarrassed. Hello, and welcome to the first ever live stream live. We are streaming live to three different platforms. We are on Instagram Live, YouTube, and Facebook Live. I hope everyone's doing well today. My name is Joshua Schubart. I'm an actor, writer, producer, stage combatant, voiceover artist, audiobook narrator, nerd. I'm a father of two, and now I guess I'm hosting a live show. This is my magical hosty cup of water. It's Ted Lasso, and I love it. So let's get right into it. I'm going to talk about what I'm watching, if there's any pop culture events that I'm really into, and then we're going to introduce my guest for today. His name is Evan Pickering. He is an author. He just published his latest book in the Hymn of the Ancients series, book three. I'm a huge fan. I am also blood related to this man. He is my brother. We have spent our entire lives together. But as a creative person and an actor, I spend a lot of time talking to people and trying to understand them. So I thought, why not have a show where I get to talk to people and also come to understand them? So as comments go, we will try and answer as many of your questions as we possibly can. I can see all of them in Instagram. It's going to take me a minute to scroll through them all. And they should pop up pretty immediately from YouTube and Facebook if you're watching there. But anyway, so let's get right into it. What am I watching now? I am watching The Penguin on HBO, which is masterful and wonderful. And if you haven't seen it yet, I don't know why. It's one of the best Batman things I've seen in a long time. Colin Farrell's performance is just magnificent. When you're in acting school, you do a lot of work with masks and using mask work and things of that nature. And that's essentially what a prosthetic is. You're acting through an artifice that isn't you, that's becoming you. I don't know if I could make that any more artsy than I already have, but he's doing an incredible job at doing that. So, and the performances are also real and also grounded, and there should be people nominated for multiple Emmys from this show. Have you seen the show? If you have, let me know. Pop it in the comments. We can talk about that either now or at the end or in the middle or whenever. And I'm also watching Agatha All Along on Disney Plus. And I have to say, I was skeptical as shit about Agatha All Along. I didn't know what it was going to be, all the working title changes and all that stuff. But it ended up, I'm in love with it. It's so much fun. It's so beautifully shot. It's written really well. Everyone is so, so freaking awesome in it. I'm loving Agatha too. It's so good. I just really, really enjoy it. And I didn't think I would enjoy it this much. A lot of the Marvel TV shows, to me at least, have been kind of a disappointment. So I am very, very pleased to see that they're trending up in a really good, positive way. And also, like, this is like ultra feminist, queer as hell, and just really well done in a way that, like, if you're hating on it, it's just because you have issues with types of people or you don't like to see a bunch of strong women or whatever. But yeah. Do I think Mephisto is going to show up? If Mephisto doesn't show up, it'll be like the multiple year long blue balls waiting for this dude to fucking show up. Like everyone thought that he was going to, show up in WandaVision. And there were all these hints like, oh, it's his wallpaper. Oh, he's that bug or whatever. But I thought the teen was going to be Mephisto. And then I thought that what's her face? The Aubrey Plaza, who is playing Death, which I think is fucking sick, was going to be Mephisto, but we'll probably see him or her or they, however they end up doing that. Mephisto is a demon, so what are you going to do? Yeah. Did you know a bunch of queer witches is what I didn't know that a bunch of queer witches is what I needed in my life too. But here's the thing about that. And I want to make a quick comment about it before I bring Evan up. You know, we talk about stuff in this a lot in these terms. I'm like, it's a queer show. It's a black show. It's a Latino show. It's a whatever show. For me and for most people, if the show is good and it doesn't really matter what the story's about, because it's just a really good story. And that's all that people want to see is compelling stories. And if we can get more cool, compelling stories from all parts of the world, and all cultures and sexualities and, you know, like everything, then I just think we'll have a much better microcosm of entertainment and much healthier TV and films, just because, yeah, it's been cool to see what's been made. Yes. As for, like things happening in the world or pop culture, obviously, we're all getting ready to vote, or if you haven't yet, early voting is a thing, almost everywhere. Get out there and cast your vote. It's important all the time, but it's important now more than ever. I know I'm just a guy on the internet that has a microphone and a camera, and you're watching me and I'm speaking to you. But yeah, voting is huge. Let's all go out and let's all vote. Let's vote. That's it, voting. Yeah, it's a really good story, but to see Marvel just being this much in your face about sexuality is awesome. I agree with that too. Seeing Marvel being in your face with just sexuality in general, when it is such a thing in the comic books and just has been forever, is very like awesome to see too. I mean X-Men 97 obviously leaned into this very, very hard, but which is another great example of just incredible shit. And that's an animation that made me cry more than most hardcore dramas, which I think is crazy. All right, let me intro Evan Pickering. Evan Pickering is an Amazon best-selling author. He has self-published 7 of his own goddamn novels, which I think is an incredibly hard thing to do. And especially being a bestseller, he's also gotten such good deals and notoriety and popularity both here in America and internationally. I'm a huge fan of his, not just because we are members of the same family, we are biological cousins, but we are brothers in every other sense of the word and feeling and everything else. So it's my honor to bring up and introduce to you, maybe for the first time, Evan Pickering.
Hey, what's up, bro? How are you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great. It's very hilarious that, thankfully, I'm here, but I have my laptop set up on my desktop right now because my desktop camera / microphone just decided to explode right before this began. So I'm glad.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's fine. I'm glad I made it in before the starting.
I'm glad you made it in too, because if you didn't, I'd just be talking about Agatha for the entirety of the show.
You'd be like, all right, we're talking comics, we're talking Marvel, we're talking
everything. We're talking comics, we're talking Marvel. We can talk about Warhammer, D&D. We'll talk about any fucking video game that we possibly can.
I mean, that is the life hack about being a huge nerd, is that like you really never run out of things to talk about when it comes to arts or anything. You could just I'll just go on, like bring up a subject, I'll talk about it forever. Who cares?
Yeah, I can talk about it forever. I mean, I can also talk about football, the NFL. I mean, like, I'm not just a nerd. I'm also like a sportsman guy. I don't know, sports guy.
Really? Yeah. I feel like that's like the elite state is like, I love being able to be both a nerd and also be like, I like to play basketball. I like to watch football. Like, why not do all of it? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I love that. That's
why can't you do everything?
Why can't you have it all?
heaven.
Gosh dang it, why can't you have it all?
Why can't we have it all?
Why not, you crazy bastard?
Why not? All right. So yeah, we're here to talk about your new novel, which is called
Legacy of the Betrayer,
which is book three of your
Hymn of the Ancients series.
That's sick. So from what I understand about it is this isn't from what I understand, like I haven't read them. This is an epic fantasy world. Completely new, that you made up all by yourself with your magical brain.
I sure did.
So what is this trilogy about in a nutshell?
This is one of those questions that's so fun. I feel like as an author, it's so hard to like I actually have to work at answering this question the right way, because there's so many different directions you can go. But ultimately, kind of what I've landed on was, it's a series that it's an epic fantasy adventure that for me, I wanted to be grounded in a lot of like dark fantasy elements. And when I say that, like, I want the world to feel real. I want the characters to feel like they could be you or me or anyone else, right? That there is this, like, you know, obviously high fantasy, epic fantasy, like dark fantasy, where you end up on that spectrum, or you could be both or whatever, is interesting. But for me, it was like, I wanted a story about characters that you just would be interested to read about regardless of whether they were in a fantasy world or a sci-fi world or our world. Like, I wanted a character-driven story in a fantasy world that just has like packed full of action and adventure and fun and humor. And so in terms of the plot, you know, it follows some kind of standard fantasy elements. The main character, Leo, he was born to like the greatest. He's like the grandson of the greatest hero of the Northern Kingdoms. And he decides that he wants nothing to do with that. Like, all he ever wanted in his life was to be free, to live his life the way he wanted, rather than like be confined to castles and keeps and council meetings and all this stuff. So he like leaves it all behind. He throws away his lordly title and everything and leaves to go become an excavator.
Would you say that he's like a hedge fund kid that moves to Brooklyn and tries to name for himself?
Yeah, honestly, in a way, yeah. Like, he comes from the elite, which is funny. And like, obviously, he's a skilled swordsman and warrior. His father was a warrior, and so like he was taught all the skill at arms, you know, because it is kind of a sword and sorcery story. It is like a swashbuckling, you know, magic and fighting adventure too. So he's like a very, very capable warrior. But ultimately, like, philosophically, he just doesn't agree with sort of like his upbringing. Like, he doesn't want to be a part of like the lordly caste. And so he kind of throws it all away. And like, when people see him out in the world in the story, they're kind of like, what the hell is wrong with you? Like, why would you throw away everything, you know? But to him, like, I like the idea of the character, you know, because obviously there's the fancy trope of like starting at the bottom and, you know, like unlikely hero from the bottom. Like, I like the idea of an unlikely hero from the top. Like, he was born to the elite class, but he decides that that's not the world he wants. So he leaves it behind.
He wants to be a man of the people.
And he wants to pursue his own interests, which is like explore the world, discover secrets of the ancient world. Like, you know, in this fantasy world, like many fantasy worlds, there is like ancient civilizations that have been lost and like histories that have been lost. So what he does, he joins an excavator crew, and excavators are basically like poor commoners who search the world looking for relics of the ancient civilizations, because if they find them, they can sell them for like boatloads of money and get rich. It's kind of like trying to find Willy Wonka lotto tickets, you know, like,
okay.
And so like he joins this kind of ragtag crew, and like they become his friends and his companions. It's like, you know, kind of unlikely group of companions of all different walks of life. And the story begins, they're just kind of doing their thing. It's the day in the life, you know, classic storytelling begins with a day in the life.
Classic storytelling.
Classic. And then he discovers, he accidentally like is drawn to this place and falls through a sinkhole and finds like deep buried in the earth this like ancient church that was like somehow preserved through time. And in that church, he finds a tome that when he touches it, he realizes it's magical. And like, it, like, he starts having visions and seeing things. And he realized that this sort of thing hasn't been found in like thousands of years. And so he's like, oh my God, he just found the quote unquote Willy Wonka lotto ticket. Right. But when that happens, all of a sudden, like people he has no idea who they are, start coming out of the woodwork and start hunting him and his friends. And you know, then kind of like the adventure goes. Like the adventure goes from there, of like discovering like what is this tome, what's the history of it, what's at stake, who knows about this, and why are they hunting it, and why are they hunting Leo, the main character, and his friends. And you know, I'm very much like, I love mystery. I've always loved mysteries, and I work a lot of mystery into the novels, as you know, and they kind of like unfurl themselves through each novel. Kind of has its own like big mystery or mysteries that unfurl as the story goes. And
so how much influence would you say, like, you and I have playing a lot of D&D and things of that nature. Oh, yeah. How much of an influence was that in creating this world?
Oh, like hugely. I think a lot of what I basically did in creating the world was like, I blended a lot of different fantasy things that I loved, you know, like it's a little bit Game of Thrones. It's a little bit Dragon Age. It's a little bit D&D. Well, it's probably a lot of it D&D, because there's a lot of like the classic D&D races and things like that. So in many ways, it is a somewhat familiar fantasy world. I've sort of just like crafted in my own way, and there's different elements. There's all their own, you know, there's their own religions and gods and histories and you know, political intrigue and conflicts and stuff like that. And I basically, yeah, as you said, like I was inspired by all the stuff we loved growing up, dude. Like, you know, even things like Dragonlance when we were kids reading.
Oh, yeah, Dragonlance. So in those books, those were what, like kid fantasy? Like no one ever really died, right?
Yeah, I mean, like a few characters would die, but when they die, it would be like cinematic. It was like, you know, it was very high fantasy. Like, you know, in Dragonlance, when Sturm dies, he dies like nobly to save everyone when they're
right. He like dies like on a griffin, like
fire
or whatever he does.
Yeah, but I agree with you. You know, it's like a million novels, and most of the characters are alive throughout it all. So yeah, it definitely follows like the kind of classic high fantasy, like heroes of heroes arc. And like,
oh, Evan, look.
Oh,
very handsome man.
Very handsome man.
Oh, well, you did it.
All right.
He's talking about me. All right.
Well, thank you, dude. Thanks for the compliment. I appreciate that. But yeah, you know, so I think a lot of stuff you and I grew up reading, video games we played, you know, D&D we played, everything. You know, you and I, we've been fantasy nerds our whole life. And I think I realized, you know, my first series I wrote was not fantasy. It was post-apoc sci-fi, but it was a Robin Hood story. But the more I wrote, I realized like the fantasy is what I love the most, because you and I, we played all those games together. We did all the stuff together. And it was like, right. it was the type of storytelling that I resonated with you the most, and I enjoyed the most.
That's great.
Yeah.
And so I think it's awesome. And you can totally tell in your work that you have a love for this world and this type of writing and this type of storytelling. Because, I mean, in my opinion, I've read a lot of fantasy. It is very masterfully done.
That's awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it.
It's a fun tale. It's a great story. It's got a lot of twists and turns and fun characters. Mm-hmm. And, one of the things that I like a lot, and I know that like maybe it's kind of like deep cut stuff for like people that really like and enjoy fantasy, is all the like poems and like songs and things that you've added into your story. You know, they feel very like Tolkien and very reminiscent of very classic.
Yeah.
Classic fantasy, like it's like an homage to.
Yeah, I mean, I love that, dude. I love that you appreciate that stuff. And in truth, I mean, you're right. It's very on point. Like, one of the things that's interesting is like, for me anyway, is that my stories, these novels are kind of a blend. Like, there are a lot of people who say the stories remind them of Lord of the Rings. You know, I actually like, one of my favorite reviews I ever gotten was someone was like, I can't put the book down. It reminds me of Lord of the Rings. And I was like, that's so awesome, you know? And like, I as someone who, you know, I'm obsessed, we're both obsessed with Lord of the Rings. I took so much inspiration from that. And, you know, but I always love that, because it's obviously Tolkien is the master. He's like the to even be mentioned in similar sentences with him is like an honor beyond compare. Yeah. So it's really cool. But yeah, I love that. I love the idea of like painting the world with a rich paintbrush, you know, of like put in poems and music and songs, make, you know, like without, and the big thing for me was like, I wanted the tempo and the pace of the story to still feel like fun and modern and kind of like, you know, go at a good clip and just kind of like sprinkle the breadcrumb in all the world building and the culture and everything as it goes. I like that model. I like that kind of, I guess, slightly more modern model of it. But yeah, I mean, Tolkien's a huge inspiration for me. I love that stuff. It was fun to do.
You didn't go the conventional publishing route. You published everything on your own. Mm-hmm. Can you speak a little bit about why? Like, I know it's not a little bit. You can go forever, but benefit of publishing on your own versus conventional publishing?
Yeah, this is something like you said, you know, I can go off about this, but something I'd love to talk about, especially to people, anyone who'll listen, especially if they're potential writers or anything to that sort. I think obviously people should follow the path that best suits them. You know, if they really don't like being at the helm of their own controls in terms of like the marketing, the advertising, the all that stuff. Like, I understand why some people want to go conventionally published, but
I would imagine that's a lot to learn, right? You have to learn how to do everything versus one thing.
Yeah, I've learned. I've learned a tremendous amount doing self-publishing. The cool thing is, though, like for people who want to do it, there's so many resources out there now. People like, you go on Reddit self-publishing. You could go, you know, there's tons of websites and other authors who have like shared their knowledge about how to do it and do it well. It obviously takes a lot of work, but like, so does everything else, you know? The data shows actually like the majority of people publish, the vast majority of people publish are self-publishing now. And a lot of people who do conventionally publish are actually hybrid. Like they do both through like big publishing houses and also on their own. But I think from my, like philosophically, I love it because it gives creative control and it gives all the potential for growth to the author and to the creator of the work. And I like my story around this, and I'll try to tell the condensed version because I'll be rambly about it. But like when I originally was trying to sell Hood, you remember I was trying to get Hood out there, I was going to writing conferences and talking to editors and agents and all this stuff.
So Hood is Evan's first really popular novel. It was post-apocalyptic, incredible book, Robin Hood adaptation in a post-apocalyptic world. Yes. And it's incredible. And you can find all of Evan's books on Amazon. If you go to Amazon and you type in Evan Pickering, they'll all pop up and you can buy them. And he's also on Kindle Unlimited. So if you have that, you can just put his books in your Kindle because it's part of your subscription. All right.
I appreciate the shout out. That's awesome. I was going and I was trying to sell the book, and I talked to some agents and editors, and you know, I got some rejections. I got a lot of people saying like, it's good, but I don't know, you know, like we don't know if there's a market, blah, blah, blah. And you know, yeah, kind of the thing that you get a lot of, you know, and it's hard, anyone who's tried to write a book and tried to be conventional published, like it's hard not to get frustrated at the rejection letters. It just like sucks. And you know, at some point you're like, you believe in your work and you're like trying to,
sure.
And it just feels weird trying to like peddle it to people and be like trying to get them to believe in it too. And you're like, I don't know, the whole process felt kind of gross and I didn't like it. And I met this one woman, Joanna Penn, JF Penn. She's a pretty well-known self-published advocate. And I saw her at a panel and she spoke. And then after the panel, I walked up to her in the library section and I was like, hey, you know, I really like what you said. I was really curious about self-publishing. Can you tell me about it? And she pretty much gave me the whole laydown. And she basically said like, look, you don't need the publishers. The publishers need you.
Sure.
And it totally reframed my whole mindset. It's like the publishers are not writing novels. They are trying to find people who wrote novels so they can sell them. So it's like, and she pretty much said like, it's the new world. Like you can publish on your own, you can do your own thing. And obviously there's more work involved, but you know, but for me, you know me, like I'm very similar to you in this, but like I love taking ownership of my own work and like building it myself.
Yeah.
And so I got so fired up. I was like, so excited. By the time I left the conference, after I talked to her, I was so excited to self-publish. Like I was hoping I was getting rejected from my other queries. Like I was like, Like if they accepted like, me,
please God, I don't want this anymore. I want to do it myself. Please,
but
God.
Literally, I was like, getting the knowledge of knowing like I could that you could succeed on your own was like, granted, this was many years ago. This was like
I will say that it is a thing that I mean we tend to both gravitate towards is doing it ourselves and like believing in our product and our work and presenting it to folks largely unapologetically, like just like here it is. I think you'll like it. I hope you will. But if you don't, I don't fucking care.
yeah, seriously. And that's something. And I know you and I, we talk about this a lot, and it's something that really resonates with me. And it's like, it's the same. Yeah, it's the same thing. It's like you gotta have pride and love in your work. And you and I, we both. I mean, you're definitely like this. I'm always admire how you go so hard at like. This is my shit and I love it and I'm putting it out there and I am like I love that you just I love you don't let anything stop you. You're like, I'm going full bore, like I believe in this is what it is, we're doing it, and it's infectious, you know, and it's really cool. And you know, you've helped me in that way that like I love doing it myself, but it was when I was younger it was harder for me to advocate for myself, but now as I'm older I'm like, yeah, I fucking love these books that I wrote. Like, I'm proud of them. They're awesome. And like,
you should
I think
they're fucking great. And you worked really hard at them.
Yeah. And it's like, it's come a long way, but it's cool, you know? And I think that's the self-made thing is something I take a lot of pride in. And I know you do too. And it's also like the big thing for me that I love with self-publishing is that like you succeed or fail on your own, which like that can be scary, but it also gives you tons of potential because you can, no one else is going to pull the plug on you. You know, if like a publishing house is like, nah, look, it's not working out. We're, you know, sorry. You know, like if you write a book and doesn't turn out as well or whatever, you fail or like you can always learn and do it again and go at it again, be better next
time. Right. Yeah. And you have the control over that. And also can't you edit manuscripts on the fly? Like you can like republish things and like it'll auto update. So how do you feel about that? How do you feel about being able to alter a work after the fact? Like,
yeah, that this is an interesting one. It's a slippery slope. I've heard authors go back and forth about this, and I think ultimately I think it's best, generally speaking, to leave a work when it's done. It's done. You don't get too involved. I've been guilty a few times of tinkering when it's over. I don't think it's particularly helpful. The only time I think it's good is like a few times I've done it. Like I'll do edits. Like if I find typos or something or like editorial things of like, hey, I need to fix this, you know, like then I think that gets fine just to clean it up. It's nice to be able to be like, because I was joking the other day. I forget who I was talking to. I think I might've been talking to Amelia that like, there are,
Evan's girlfriend, just for everybody who has no idea what he's saying.
Yeah, sorry, that's my lady. I think she's probably watching right now.
Hello, Amelia.
I was telling her, I was like, there are these typo gremlins that, like, I don't care how many times you edit a work, there still somehow is a typo. Like, it's the most insane and infuriating thing ever. Like, I don't know. But in general, I think if for no other reason, like it's good for the author to just like when it's done, love it for what it is, even if it has flaws, and just put it out there. And like if you need to make a little tweaks here and there for whatever editing reasons, that's fine. And I've certainly done it in the past. Is it worth it? Like ultimately, it's not going to make a huge difference. I mean, obviously, if it's like riddled with typos and errors, you need to fix it. But like generally, you want to fix that the first time.
No, it's true. I mean, like there are things that I've made where I watch it again and I'm like, I wish we shot this a different way, or we had better lighting here, or like I wrote that fucking line better, or you know, like something like that that we all have. I mean, but that's also can be you just being hypercritical of yourself and of your work, and that mistake might be beautiful to people that are either that are consuming it. So never know, at least in my opinion, you never know when a mistake is actually not a mistake.
Yeah, and I think especially, I mean, you and I we work really hard to be critical of ourselves and improve and be better. And so a lot of times when we look, when we look at our own work, we take a critical eye, you know, and we're like, okay, what every single thing that could have been better would have been better. And it's like, yeah, you point out like some things that look like mistakes to you could be beautiful moments to someone else, or beautiful, like artistic choices to someone else. And also there's this element that I think, like, as the creator, you just see things differently than the person viewing it.
That's true.
Like you are, when you watch your own films and your own shows and everything you've done, like you just see it differently than other people. It's the same way if you're reading your own book as an author, like you read it differently than other people because you have the foreknowledge, like, and yeah, I think that's definitely true. And it's like, it's the blessing and the curse of you and I being very critical and trying to we do it for the sake of being improving, but like it can make looking at your own stuff hard sometimes. I always joke that when I read my own works, it's somewhere I'm either going to absolutely be like so psyched about how proud I am of it, or I'm going to be like, this is crap and I did a bad job. But like,
I totally get that. Obviously.
Right. It's just the nature of being an artist, I think.
Yeah.
Like, I think most people who create things feel that way at some point
or another. If you have questions or comments for either me or for Evan on any of the platforms that we are currently on, I will see them. I am keeping my eye on Instagram. I'm keeping my eye on Facebook, and I'm keeping my eye on YouTube. There are people just telling me that I'm attractive on Instagram at the moment. But if you have a question about books or being an author or anything of that nature, please ask. Evan will answer them. He loves to speak as much as I do.
I'll answer anything. I don't care. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can ask him about his feet. He'll talk about his feet, I promise.
Yeah, they're not the best. One of them
they're very weird, but someone might want to know why. So what got you into, I have a very clear understanding of how I found acting for me. What did you have, like a oh shit moment, or is it just kind of, it just happened over time?
I think in a way both, but it's funny. I like you, I think I've always loved the power of storytelling and the beauty of the art of storytelling. And like, we've gone about it in different ways. Though actually not, I mean, you're a writer too. You write scripts and you write.
Yeah. It's not the same thing though.
Right. Like, it is different. It is different. But I think for me, like growing up when we would be playing games or reading books and all this stuff, like I think I just was enthralled with the idea of creating stories and worlds that were outside your own and experiencing these things outside yourself. And I thought it was such a brilliant, you know, like I've always loved the saying, like everything you read or see, all these media you take, it's either like a mirror or a window. You know, you're either seeing yourself in it or you're seeing a window into someone else's life. And I've always loved that. And it probably wasn't until I was in like senior in high school, because and I always loved this stuff. And then in high school, I was doing a lot of sports and other stuff and getting distracted. And then I had an awesome teacher, Mr. Owens, who was my AP Lit teacher, and he would give us like creative writing prompts or whatever. And at that point in my life, I wasn't like writing wasn't big on the radar, because again, I was BMXing and playing soccer and all these other things, and you know, had all these other interests. And he would like give us a creative writing prompt, and he would like put a sentence up there. He's like, all right, write whatever you want to write. And I would start writing, and I'd be writing, and the bell would ring, and everyone's leaving, and I'm still writing. And he would just be like, Pickering, he'd be like, Pickering, what are you doing? Get out here. And I remember like I put the pen down and looked down, and I was like, holy shit, I loved this. You know, like, and it was
just it like a compulsion for you? Like you just couldn't stop doing it?
Yeah, I think it was funny. It was like a reminder that I loved these things. You know, like it was a reminder to myself, you know, because again, when I was young, when we were super young, I would read like shit crazy. When I was living in Florida and in high school, I was way more into physical sports and BMXing and other extreme shit. Like, but it was like a reminder of my childhood of storytelling, you know, and I was just like, oh my God. And then I started writing stories and giving short stories and giving them to my AP Lit teacher, Mr. Owens, awesome guy. Still talk to him to this day. Everyone's
shout out Mr. Owens.
And he would give me critique, and he would give me legit critique. Like sometimes he'd be like, this wasn't very good. Somebody would be like, this works. Like this is powerful and it works. And I was like,
in high school.
Yeah.
Dude, that is so rare. That's awesome that you have.
I know. Like, yeah, he gave me legit feedback. Like, not, he wasn't sugarcoating anything, and I love that. And it, honestly, from that was kind of like, as much as me being in loving stories has been a lifelong thing for sure, as you know about me, but like, it was that moment, the inflection point moment was definitely that, when I was like, oh shit, like I miss this and I love this. And I started writing and, I'd write short stories and stuff. And as you remember, when we were in college together, I started writing Lore, my first novel. I never published it, but like, you know, it took me years to write. And, you know, it's howling under the bed somewhere. One day I'll go revisit it. But like,
you should. I mean, I just found, I'm not even kidding, because I'm having another child with my wife. My office.
Yeah.
Yeah, another baby, another girl.
Yeah, uncle part five from
my. I found one of my old notebooks full of ideas and partially written scripts, and
that's awesome.
I found I wrote a script based off of my time spent working at an overnights at a gas station when I had basically insane, and I would write Evan. I would write things for Evan and I would present them to him in the morning because we would travel to college together. Because yes, we grew up together. We spent almost all of our time together and we even went to college together.
this shit was the fun, I guess. I know this time of your life was horrendous because you basically weren't sleeping and you were working and going to college and doing all this shit and half times living at the apartment.
Yeah,
but like, this shit was hysterical for me. Anyway,
but I found them all, so I just found them because I saved everything. Yeah,
well, that's awesome! Holy shit, so, I can't believe you still have them.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I just I don't know. Like, I'm not a person that like likes things, but when it comes to my like art things, I'll save every little scrap of it, just in case I want to look at it, or if I haven't looked at a thing, or. So it's cool. So I'm able to see all these cool little bits from what I was writing, and it actually gave me an idea for a new piece. So I think you should go back and look at Lore and see if it can be something.
One thing I think is really cool about this, just to go on a little tangent, but like you know I love my tangents.
Tangential Evan.
I can't help it. Tangential Evan over here. This idea of like, I think, I don't know how much of this, the old stuff you've read or whatever, but one thing I think was so cool, cause I remember, I think like a year or two ago or something, I went back and I just read the first chapter of Lore cause I have all of it saved on my hard drives. And I remember like, while there was certainly flaws to it, like the energy, like I was so 18, 19, 20 years old when I was writing it, you know what I mean? Like,
was it very angsty? It's very angsty, right?
It was a combination of angst and also just like incredibly ballsy. Like it was just like it was just kind of, you know, and sometimes I look at my old short stories from when we were in our college eras. I'm like, there was a lot of just like completely balls to the wall shit that was just like, I loved that. And it reminded me of like how much I love the fearless writing, that just like the who gives a shit. And I think, I mean, I still do that for sure. But it was like the stuff I wrote back then, it was just like, I didn't give a shit what it sounded like or whatever. I was just like, it was, you know, I wrote a short story about a group of kids who robbed the same bank twice in the same week, you know, like just cause it was like, to me, it was like, it was just ridiculous and crazy. What would happen? Like, what would the bank teller say? You know, and it was just, you know, it was stupid and ridiculous, but I loved that. And so I do kind of love, I think one of the cool things about this, like that you've found some of your old work and revisiting, it's like, it's cool. One of the beautiful things about art is that the art you make at certain times of your life, like, represents certain parts and ideas of you, and it represents certain like mindsets and perspectives you had and stuff. And it's really cool to see, you know, in many ways, it's sort of like a journal to yourself. It's like an archive to yourself of like, you know, it's like you're peering into an artistic younger version of yourself. And I think that's really like fun and cool to do.
We just got a comment that says, "You guys rock." Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you for watching. You rock. Appreciate you. Appreciate all the stuff. I'm glad we're not rambling up a storm.
I mean, we're rambling, but we have nice voices, and I'm asking questions along the way. So
yeah, it's entertaining rambling. That's the key.
Entertainment ramble. As long as it makes you smile, it's not a ramble.
As long as you make people excited and fired up about all the random things you talk about. But yeah, I appreciate it, the viewers. Yeah. Anyway, that was my tangent.
Those are tangent.
Yeah.
So who is, say, like, your inspiration author wise? Like, who do you read, and how do they affect you in your own work?
I love this question because there's so many. Like, I feel like there's definitely the big ones. There's like a lot of other ones but I think probably the biggest one, especially as a fantasy writer. And you know, you and I are both fans. George R. R. Martin would probably be my biggest.
Yeah, I like him too, but I would also like him to finish his fucking series.
You know? I hung out with him. I hung out with him at a writing conference once. He's a really nice guy.
You hung out with him? Oh, well, no big deal.
This is a total shameless name drop, 100%. Yeah. I hung out with him. But the funniest part about this is when you meet someone like that, and I'm sure you know this because you've acted with a lot of well-known actors and stuff like this. Sometimes when you meet people that you're like, oh shit, it's that person.
Yeah.
But you don't want to come off like a complete like moron. You know, I'm sitting there talking to George R. R. Martin, and I was like, you know, I was at this conference and he was there, and I was like, hey, what's up? You know, and I wanted to be like, oh my God, I love your work. You're the greatest. You know, like, but you know, I'm like trying to be reasonable. But I just told him, I was like, hey man, like, I love your books. I just want to tell you, I'm like a huge fan. I started reading them in college and I really never stopped. And he was so nice. He was just like, that's really nice. He's like, what about you? What do you write? And he totally deflected about himself. And he was really kind to make it about me. And
I will say that's the same way with like other actors too. Like when like you're at a certain place and you're meeting them and you're actually like talking to them in an equality in place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, of course you're gonna be fans of your peers, and then once you're like, I think you're great, then you know they're just like, all right, cool, well, why are you here? Like,
you're right, yeah,
for a reason. You're not like at one of my book signings, so
right, yeah,
exactly. Or like, you know, I'm not at like a like outside of a stage door, I'm like on set
you're filming something with them, or you're at like a, you know, like a conference meeting with these, with other, you know, well-known, like a meet and greet with these people, you know, like you're networking, you're doing shit with these people, or you're filming shit with people. So it is different. It is more of a peer perspective than just like someone lining up, you know, to get a book signed or whatever.
Yeah, so why didn't you ask him where his fucking last book is? You should be like, listen,
dude, I wanted to so bad, but I thought he might just
bitch, like, where's the last book?
I thought he might just like pull a dragon out of his pocket and just incinerate me. And like, I think actually, cause like he had his assistant with him. And I think she said to me before, cause I was talking to her first, and she's like, yeah, just don't ask him about the books, about the next books. I was like, I wasn't really planning on it, cause I didn't want to make it contentious, you know, but as you know, you and I deeply wanted to be like, where the is the next book.
So I've been reading for 1,000 years. Abraham Lincoln, you piece of shit. Where's the last book?
I started reading these books when I was a freshman in college. That was a million years ago.
It's the only, so I ripped a book in half, and it's the only book I've ever torn in half was Storm of Swords.
Yeah.
And I've never ripped a book in half again. And
So George R. R. Martin's a big inspiration of mine. I love his work. I love Joe Abercrombie too. He's awesome. I know you got me onto Joe Abercrombie. You and Easton, our friend Easton, got me onto Joe Abercrombie. He's pretty dope. There's tons of other fantasy writers I love, but you know, I think you know, obviously the Margaret Weiss and Tracy Hickmans of the world, like the classic fantasies, Brian Jacques, who did Redwall when I was a kid and all this stuff. Like there's so many weird random influences that led to inspiring me to write. But I think George R. R. Martin probably plays one of the biggest ones for me, because I very much emulate the style. I don't emulate everything in his writing, but I emulate the style of like an engaging, gritty fantasy world, but also like characters that feel really deep and real and multi-layered and like at times morally gray or like there's not like, again, that feels more historical. You know, he based all the stuff on the War of the Roses in England and all that shit. Right. Like there's no real like right side and wrong side. It's just like people fighting for power. And that stuff.
So that actually makes a lot of sense, because my next question was, why did you start out in post-apocalyptic? But that kind of answers my question a bit, because it seems like post-apocalyptic is the natural place to go if that's the type of stuff that you are into or like drawn to, like a real gritty problematic world with real people, where there aren't, where everything is gray and people are just trying to fucking survive. Yeah, I mean, I probably should have let you answer that question instead of answering it for you, but
yeah. You're 100% right, and I love that. I love that question, because that was something that was literally the biggest thing that drew me to it. Was like, I love the idea of a story where like there are no longer pretenses. Like people can't pretend to be something really they're not anymore. Like, and that's what drew me, and you kind of touched on this with post-apoc. That's what drew me to it, is like, I loved the idea. You know, and fantasy does this in some ways too, when you have people like struggling to survive. Like there's no longer people pretending, you know, it's like people are who they are. So I love the idea of post-apoc, because like you could take people like you and me from our world, like, you know, anyone from our world, the world we know. And it's like, if you strip down all of the luxury, if you strip down all of the convenience and all of the safety and surety that we have, and instead you threw someone into like a grinder, you know, for all intents and purposes, like you'd find out exactly who they were. Like you'd find out how good they were and how bad they were. You'd find out how, what they considered like what their beliefs truly lay. My grammar at times is idiotic. I don't know. Grammar's hard. But yeah, so that for me, like I loved when I wrote Hood, I was like, I want to take real people that feel like they could be your brother, your sister, your husband, your wife, your whatever. I want to take real people from our world and put them in a survival situation at the apocalypse. And like, and so one of the things I'm most proud of with Hood is that like, it does, I set out to make it a story that feels like everyone in the story is a real person who is like trying to survive at the end of the world. And that they're not these like fan, there's not these tropes, not ever like these people are not like like gritty survivalists who are ready to pull a trigger at a moment's notice. Like these are people who used to have jobs and lives and stuff. And I love the idea of like what happens when you take like once like whole people and you throw them into this broken world. And And so that was the big thing for me. And I absolutely love that. And I loved, you know, my first series, my post-apoc series, the American Rebirth series, starting with Hood. That was what I loved most about it. And it was most fun. And I'm really proud that that came through, I think, in the stories.
And you can find all of these on Amazon by searching for Evan Pickering. Yeah. They're all worth a read. They're all great. I've read them all except for the new one, and I'm going to read that soon. I'm very excited.
Yeah, I think you're going to really like it, dude.
I am too. I'm very amped. Normally you're supposed to read the thing that you're promoing, but you know what? I'm going to be honest. I haven't read it yet, but I'm excited too.
You know what? When you're doing the promo, like almost immediately after the book gets launched, I think it's understandable.
like it launched what? Like a day ago or something?
Nah, it was like a week ago.
Like a week ago? Yeah, I totally know what's going on.
Yeah. No. But I think between you and me, bro, I think you're really going to love it. Not only because I think it's the best book I've written, but I think it's like I've really hit my stride with writing fantasy with this one. And early indications from readers and from feedback I've gotten from people is that they really fucking love it. And that really gets me fired up. So
that's awesome. So that's what you want
to
hear.
From bro to bro, I think you'll really enjoy it. So it'll be cool.
I'm excited to read it. So we've been talking for nearly one whole hour.
Oh my God.
That's crazy. My goodness. So I am going to stop talking to you.
All right, dog. Well, I appreciate you having me on here, dude. This was awesome.
So why can you please tell the people where they can find you on social media? What are your handles?
Yeah, you can find me on TikTok. I am trying to build a Book Talk account. I am just, I believe it's Evan Pickering Author. Let me double check that. I'm sorry. You can find me on Twitter. You can just look up Evan Pickering Author on Twitter. I'm not on Twitter as much these days. TikTok is the big thing. My handle, you can either look up Evan Pickering or at Evan Writes Books. That's my current TikTok handle. I'm trying to, Book Talk is a big place for writers, so I'm trying to get on there.
People the like Book Talk is really supportive too. Like I'm not part of it, but watching them all support each other is really heartwarming, because in my industry, it's very hard for people to find that. There is a lot of competition, a lot of really toxic competition. So it's nice to see people just embracing each other. Like, you know, like the gnarliest, most pornographic romance novelist is just embracing like the grittiest, like most hardcore post-apocalyptic person. Like they're just hugging and
it's really cool.
Each other. It's fantastic.
I agree. It's really cool. It's cool to see a whole community kind of like bonding over a shared love of reading and books and stuff. And outside of just the marketing purposes of being on there, I also just kind of like really like it. Like people have been really nice and everyone's really cool. And, you know, there's a lot of like you said, a lot of support and a lot of love and it's awesome. So that's kind of where I'm focused on a lot now. You can also find, my website, evanpickeringauthor.com. You can find all my books on there. You can sign up for my newsletter if you want to get updates on books and other stuff I'm working on and sales for my books and things like that. And then obviously you can find my books on Amazon. Just look up Evan Pickering and you can see them all there. All that jazz.
All right, Evan, I really appreciate you being here tonight, and it was a pleasure speaking with you, like it always is.
Yeah, bro.
And I will talk to you very, very soon.
All right, dude. Thank you for everything. This was awesome. And I'll talk to you later.
All right, man. Thanks so much for being here. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for coming to the first live stream live. I'm going to try to do multiple of these a month and speak to people that I think are very, very interesting and that I think you would think are very, very interesting. Depending on what platform you are on, you can like, you can subscribe, you can subscribe to my membership on my Instagram. I am dropping a new episode of my TV show after this evening, episode 5. I've got, if you're watching on YouTube and Facebook, there's links and descriptions to my stuff, Evan's stuff. And if you're watching on Instagram, there's links in my bio. That's my rambly weird end of this live, but I appreciate you being here. Thank you so much. And I'll see you again very soon. Good night.